Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, it's Todd. Before we get started, if you like what you hear or you have any questions about this podcast, please tweet at me at @Todd_Garner on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood.
I'm Adam Sandler.
I'm Rebel Wilson.
This is Jeff Probst.
I'm Kaylee Cuoco.
I'm Eli Roth.
This is Marlon Wayans.
Hey, it's Ed Helms.
This is Shay Mitchell.
Everybody, this is Kevin James, and this is The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
What a combination.
All right, I'm here with Pam Abdi. Hello, Pam.
Hey, Todd. How's it going?
Oh, you know, good. How are you? Are you safe and well, and everybody in your family good?
Yes, we good. Are here and well. Family on the East Coast, family in Chicago, and luckily everyone is healthy.
Great. Oh, that's so good. Me as well. Well, I'm so glad you're doing this because I was fascinated by the timing of you and Mike DeLuca getting the jobs to run MGM and to put a new spin on it, your guys' spin. And I was fascinated because the entire time has been during the pandemic. So I would love to talk to you about two things. You vacillating between being a producer and an executive. I've only done it once. I've only done it one way. You've gone back.
I've done it quite a bit.
You keep going back and forth. And I want to talk to you about kind of your mindset and what you think the difference of those two jobs are and what the skill sets of those two jobs are, in case there's people out there that wonder, should it be a producer or should it be an executive? And then we'll talk a little bit about how do you open a movie studio during a pandemic. You have such great producing credits between,
you know,
between Garden State and Man on the Moon and Identity Theft and 47 Ronin and Million Little Pieces and Clean and Slim. And you've worked at all these great studios, MGM Now, you've worked at Paramount, you were at New Regency. So you have this great career of going back and forth. First of all, tell me, growing up, where you grew up and kind of what you were interested in and what really inspired you to be in the business.
Great. Well, first off, thanks for having me. And we've been friends for a really long time, so this is super fun. I grew up in New Jersey. I was born in the early 70s, and I grew up in a half Italian, half Syrian American family. And we went to the movies all the time, and we did those kinds of things, but I didn't really know I could have a job in the movie business. My childhood was spent, I was a dancer. I trained to dance by the time I was like 7, 8 years old, I was dancing 6 days a week. So that was my life. For me, it was about, I was always going to be a dancer. I was always going to be in the theater. My mom, she is a saint, would drive me into New York City all the time. I performed at the Met a couple of years during, we did this, one of my dance classes and my gymnastic classes, actually, we became the animals in Hansel and Gretel in the opera they did there. So we did that a couple of years. I was auditioning. I love dance. I competed all over the country. And I thought that that's what my path was. I ended up graduating from high school and going to Emerson College in Boston, which is one of the best schools out there. And I went for dance and for theater. My degree is a Bachelor of Fine Arts in theater. And while I was during my second semester sophomore year, I broke my leg. I was in point class. I was going from fifth position to second position, and I had a stress fracture that I didn't take care of and didn't know, and I just collapsed, and I ended up going to the hospital. Yeah, and it was a horrible accident. I ended up being in an air cast and rehab, and it took me out of dancing, and it was the first time in my life where I was like, oh no, like, what happens if I can't dance? What happens if I can't perform? I don't know anything else. This is my life. And it was a really, you know, devastating turning point. But what I did do, thanks to Emerson, was I kind of moseyed over in my crutches over to the film department because I had always loved film. It was actually my dad and I. My dad was an attorney, and he worked a lot when I was a kid. And when he would come home, like, we always connected over movies. So we shared a love of movies. It was the one thing that, like, no matter what was happening, if my dad can get interested in a picture, he would sit in front of the TV and we'd watch movies together. I mean, we watched, you know, Angels with Dirty Faces. We watched Godfather. We watched Tootsie. We watched just any kinds of movies, all genres.
Do you remember the movie that really got you and inspired you and thought to yourself, man, I think I might like to do that?
Well, I didn't, like I said, like it wasn't, I loved movies as a kid, but I didn't think I could have a job in movies. I thought you had to look like Steven Spielberg and be a director, or right. You had to, you know, be an actress. And I didn't want to be an actress. That wasn't my path. So again, I loved cinema and I loved like E.T. and Star Wars. And, you know, it wasn't until I was in college where I really started to become a student of cinema during this time when I broke my leg that I found like, oh my gosh, there is maybe a place for me. So when I went over to the film department, I had this amazing teacher who was, his name was Dave Roderick, and he was a documentary filmmaker. He was a jazz musician. He made art, and he just was this really inspiring guy. And he taught me like there was a path to make films, and film is not so different than dance. Like as a choreographer, if you look at it from the perspective of a choreographer, which happens to a lot of dancers when they can't perform anymore because our bodies give out, you end up, you know, maybe forging on a path to becoming a choreographer. And for me, that's what the camera was.
Right.
So,
and you're just telling stories.
You're telling stories.
Dance, right.
Yeah. Through words and physical movement within a space. Whereas in dance, you're just telling movement with your body. So it was like a revelation for me at that moment. Right. Cause I was like, oh wait. So then I just became hungry and voracious for everything. And I was like, you know, obsessed with the 70s, obsessed with Lumet, obsessed with Scorsese, you know, Coppola, Bogdanovich. I mean, Women Under the Influence, I loved Paul Mazursky, you know, like I loved movies. And then I watched all that jazz, which was life changing for me because it was the combination of the two things I loved. Right. And it was a complex, difficult character reflecting on his life, telling stories through dance, making complicated choices. So that was like everything for me. So,
and have you bonded with, sorry to interrupt you, have you bonded with your boss over his love of dance in movies through Saturday Night Fever?
Yes.
And now Mike DeLuca, and yes. That's like his movie that changed his life was Saturday Night Fever, who saw himself and kind of his people and his crew, even though he wasn't a dancer, he saw that up on screen and was like, holy shit, I can do this. So you guys have that in common.
We do. And Mike and I have been friends for a very long time. And we've gone to see musical theater together. And, you know, we have a big love of musical theater and dance. And you know, and by the way, MGM's made some of the great musicals. Yes. But anyway, so while I was in college, you know, the interesting thing, though, was I didn't know that I also still didn't know what would my place be in the movie business because I didn't know anybody in the movie business. I just knew that I wanted to be part of it and I had to figure out how to do it. And I started reading about different people's jobs and I read Dawn Steele's book and I read Julia Phillips' book. And those were really illuminating to me because they were like me. They were women. I don't know if you've ever read Dawn Steele's book.
Oh, yeah.
They Can Kill You, But They Can't Eat You.
Sure. I worked with Dawn Steele. I was an assistant at Columbia when she was there.
Amazing.
And then I was an executive at Disney when she moved her first look deal over to Disney because she was really close with Jeffrey. And so serviced her deal for a few years until she unfortunately passed away.
Yeah, I mean, she's remarkable, and it's very funny. When I took the job at MGM, I went back and reread her book just because there's so much about her and her energy and the way she sort of the love that she had for films and what she stood up for and being a woman inside of a system that was not necessarily always set up for women to be in powerful positions. She fascinated me, and I never had the privilege of meeting her, but I did have the privilege when of working for Sherry Lansing for a year when I worked at Paramount. So, you know, in college, when there's not people that look like you or that are like you doing, being a director, like there just wasn't, there wasn't enough women making films then that I even knew that that was potentially a path for me.
Right.
But seeing these female producers and female executives and knowing who I am as a like very like an organizer and, you know, love to have my hands in every aspect of something and solve problems and be and very maternal and nurturing as a person, I found that that was a good place for me to focus my energy on in the business. So I ended up, I will tell you, and again, I'll show you a little bit of me being naive, but when I was in college, I was watching Reality Bites, and which I loved. And there's a little logo on the film for this company, Jersey Films. And I was like, this is amazing. I can work at this company and I can live in New Jersey. I'm so excited because, you know, that's everyone's dream to go live in New Jersey. But I had no idea, you know. So anyway, Emerson, I ended up, Emerson has this wonderful program where in your first or second semester senior year, you get to move to Los Angeles and you get an internship and you finish up whatever credits you have left, like school-wise, and you get an internship. And I was very lucky in 1995 to get an internship at Jersey Films. I sought after it. I had to work there. I was so excited by the movies they were making. They had made Reality Bites at the time. They had made Pulp Fiction at the time. And when I came to the company, Get Shorty was about to get released. And they were making another film, Sunset Park. And I had three of the best bosses anyone could ever have in Danny DeVito and Stacey Sharon and Michael Shamberg. And I ended up spending the first, you know, 8.5 years of my career there. I started as an intern. They hired me after a month to be the receptionist, and I answered the phones. And Stacey really took me under her wing, and she really taught me about scripts and storytelling and how to read scripts and how to develop scripts. And two of the first scripts she gave to me were Truman Show and Boogie Nights. And They weren't making those movies, but they were. She just wanted me to see what it is to read spectacular writing. And I have to say, when Paul walked in the office that day, it was like, you know, for me, it was like a rock star walking in the office.
Sure, sure.
That script was masterful.
So pause for 1 second. I'm just going to pause for 1 second. Sorry.
Yeah.
Pause for 1 second. I have to talk about Stacey Sher for a second because she is somebody that I've known for a long, long time. I don't think I've ever worked with her, and I haven't been particularly close, but I followed her from a distance for a long time because to a person, she is exactly what she is described as. She is insanely intelligent. She is very well read. She does the work. She doesn't get involved in all the bullshit. She's made huge movies. She has great taste. And like you, anybody that's ever worked for her has said the same thing, that she's taken them under her wing, showed them great writing, showed them great filmmaking, showed them great filmmakers. So just a huge shout out to her.
Because
that's just needs, everybody needs to be that way in the business, because there's a lot, especially at that time, as it's now being revealed, there's a lot of shitty stuff going on in the business, and not just shitty in the terms of like, you know, the horrible shit that Harvey was doing, et cetera, but just shitty, like loud asshole producers, bad behavior, throwing fucking staplers, being a total jerk, thinking that was rewarded, being the most macho, driving the fastest car, that all bullshit time. Through that, you're right, Michael Shamberg and Danny and Stacey were crushing it and making the best movies and not getting sucked into all that bullshit. just going out and doing the work, being good to people, being good to filmmakers, backing their vision and making great movies. It deserves to be shouted out. It really does.
It does. They were remarkable. I am so blessed that I was brought into that, you know, that I got that internship and that they, you know, they are my family. I mean, Stacy and Danny, especially with Stacy and Danny, because after I became the receptionist, and Stacy was really training me, and I am forever grateful to her. She is my sister. We are best friends till this day. And, you know, she's a mentor and she's always lifted women and lifted filmmakers. So I respect her forever. I then went on to become Danny's assistant. And that was also a fascinating milestone in my career because, you know, he gave me an incredible opportunity because I got to go on set with him all the time. And I learned how to make a film being his assistant. I was on multiple movies, not only with him as a director, but him as an actor. I was able to observe. I was able to learn. I was able to go around to every single department and really figure out the nuts and bolts of what it was to make a film and learn production, which I deeply love. I love making movies. I love being on set. If I could be on set every single day of the year, I would.
Me too.
But I love it. It is, there's nothing more fun. And, you know, that company in the 90s was remarkable. They really were. It was a community of filmmakers. I mean, I remember there were years, like a couple years where every so often we would do these film festivals up at Danny's house and we would host them from Jersey and we'd get a bunch of food and we'd have wine and we'd invite actors and writers and directors and we'd watch old prints of movies and we would sit around and talk about cinema and talk about art and talk about the business. And it was like, it was truly one of the best times in my career. And I'll never forget it. And I ended up working my way up through the company. And I ended up leaving as the last, I was there for 8.5 years and I left as president of the company. And the last film I had produced there was Garden State. And then the company sadly, you know, went away and everyone went on to do different things, but I'll always cherish that those 8.5 years. It was truly one of the best times. And it was also one of the best times in the business. You know, it was the late 90s. It was so much fun. Everybody was making, you know, there was a lot of movies getting made, a lot of different movies getting made. You know, a lot of the big studios were still making like really filmmaker driven movies coupled with their big action movies and comedies. And it just was a great energetic time. And then I made Garden State. And while I was making Garden State, the company closed. I finished that film, which is, again, another turning point in my personal career because it was the first movie that I got a full produced by credit on. I found that script. I championed that script. I loved that script. And, you know, Zach and I got to go home to New Jersey where we grew up. Both of us, he grew up very close to me. In a different town, but we ended up making the film literally in our backyards with wow. all of our family and friends. And it was a really hard movie to make. We made it for like no money. You know, it was at that time it was $2.5 million. And we had no money for me to stay in a hotel. So I moved in with my parents.
That's perfect.
It was amazing. And there I was 28 years old coming home to make this movie about a guy who goes home and has to like reconcile his past to move forward in his present. And there I was living with my mom and dad, making this movie.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really fun. And honestly, if it wasn't for that, like we probably couldn't have gotten the movie made the way we did because like literally we got, I needed a bus to get extras to New Jersey out of New York. And my friend who I grew up with and went to high school with, Anthony Trapasso, he owned a bus company.
Hold on a second. There is no more Jersey name.
I know. Anthony Trapasso, my good friend from high school. And he lent me the bus and a bus driver so I could transport extras from New York City to a cemetery in New Jersey where my dad's cousin, Gary Sherino, worked at the cemetery, and he gave us the cemetery for no location fee. So that is producing.
That's amazing. That is so great. And by the way, that's exactly the way you should start. You know, you manifested it. You said, hey, there's this film company called Jersey Films. I can do a movie right in my hometown. And you made it happen. That's amazing.
I never even thought of it that way. That's really sweet, Todd, because that was like the bookend to the whole Jersey Films experience. It was the last film I made before I then went off and went to Paramount.
And that's where you become an executive.
And that's where I become an executive. And man, I showed up at Paramount and I was like, wow, have I ever made a movie before? Am I even in the movie business? Like, this is a whole nother level and experience. And it's really interesting because you learn a whole different skill set, right?
Sure.
There's the business of it. Because as a producer, we're not privy to the studio modeling, you know, how they model films and how they determine budgets. And we're not privy to all the financing structure. We're out there as producers. We're passionate about our movies. We're going to find financing. And then, you know, you're working with the financiers, but you don't have to do all that stuff. Because once you find that infrastructure that's paying for your film, then your job as the producer, is basically running the movie every day and making sure creatively the director has what they need and that you're delivering, you know, everything you need to hopefully have a successful film. And on the studio side, it's just so much more than that. It's hard.
Yeah. Well, you see in your first business affairs meeting, when you finally look at when someone shows you a P&L, you realize how much overhead Paramount's carrying with that giant lot, with all those stages and with all those people and the marketing people and all the salaries and bonuses and jets and cafeterias. And you realize, oh, shit. We have to pay for all of this.
Yeah.
Somehow, you know, obviously we have a very big library, but somehow my job is to help pay for all of the people sitting around this giant table right now looking at me saying, what you got? And as producers, we're like, oh, all I got to do is get the budget. And then I figure that budget and then, you know, and then it gets released and a little bit of marketing money. My back end should kick in pretty fast.
Yeah.
And then you look at your P&L and you go, holy shit. There's a lot of overhead that gets charged. And so as soon as you make that jump over to the studio side, you have empathy for the fact that, oh, I get it. I can't make a movie for $2 million that grosses $6 million. I have to think differently if I'm going to be in the studio system.
Yeah, which I think is good. And, you know, listen, when I got to Paramount, it was 2003. And I was there from 2003 to 2008, where there was, I mean, listen, there were multiple regime changes every year. So as an executive, you know, our mutual friend, Kevin Mischer, said something to me one day, which was really actually interesting. He said, you know, the best job in town is an EVP at a studio. And I was like, well, why do you say that? And he was like, because you get a lot of material, you get to develop material, you get to advocate for material, you get to be passionate about material, you get to run your movies, but you're not in that hot seat of my current job where you're actually like responsible for picking all the movies, you know? So,
and have the unfortunate task of saying no.
Yeah.
The great thing about being an EVP is you're always saying yes. You're pushing it. You're like a producer in that sense. And then your boss, unfortunately, is the person who has to tell everybody no. And then you can, then you can say, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. I really love this, and keep your relationship.
Yeah, true. But, you know, I always approached it really, you know, because I started as a producer and because, frankly, I worked for Danny, who is a director and an actor and a producer, and frankly, Stacey, like, I always approached the job as a producer. I think if you ask anyone who's worked with me when I am a studio executive, I have empathy for filmmakers, and I understand, and I have empathy for producers because I know how hard it is to get your movie made and to get it greenlit from that side. So I feel like I try to always approach it with a producing hat on, and collaboratively. And listen, there, you know, every movie has a budget, whether you're the producer or you're the studio executive. And it's about how you collaborate and work with the filmmakers to get there. It's not, you're not going to be able to say yes to everything, but you're going to be able to say, here's an option. How about this? Does this work creatively? So you're working together. It should be a collaborative process. And at a certain point, you know, I also believe you're hiring the filmmakers to be the filmmakers. And if you look at the films, you know, that I love and that I've championed in my career, a lot of them are very singular authorship types of directors. And I truly believe in that. I truly believe in those directors. I love filmmakers. I love filmmakers that have a very strong point of view and let them go make their movie. Like, you know, you shouldn't have studios like meddling in the middle of the movie making process. You know, I think it's about everybody being on the same page up front and being transparent and being honest and giving people a safe creative space to be artists and to make the films. I mean, you should, at, you know, you should always be, I think, you know, it doesn't always work that way. And that might seem like an idealistic approach. I've been in other situations where it's not like that as well. It's not like it's all perfect, but I do believe it is a collaborative business. And, you know, you have to give people creative space to be who, you know, to make the films they want to make.
Well, and also because you've gone back and forth and you've been on the other side and you've been a producer, you know, I think that people who just are studio executives their whole lives may get burned a bunch of times and just think we're all a bunch of idiots and just trying to get our check and get the hell out of there. And you being on the other side, at least you have that knowledge to say, oh, I get it. I know that they have the best interest at heart. They have, you know, they're not just going to go and take my money and run off with it, you know. So since you've been on both sides, you know, you're more able to understand that and be more trusting.
I mean, I guess I you know, listen, I can only judge my path. You know, I can only take the lessons that I've learned at each of my jobs and apply them to how I want, you know, each chapter of my life to go. I can't, you know, people, you know, young, I do a lot of speaking with kids, students from Emerson when they're graduating and they're like, you know, they're just like, what should I do? Should I go this path? Should I go that path? And I think, you know, my advice to them always is I can't tell you what path to take. You know, I can tell you to read. I can tell you to watch movies and I can tell you to try to get experience where you can get experience, whether it be a production assistant starting out, whether it be an assistant at an agency or a production company. I do tell everybody who wants to write and try to make money elsewhere, where, because I do feel like once you get into this path of like starting as an assistant and going into creative jobs and, you know, at a production company or a studio and you're rising up, all of a sudden it's like 10 years later and you may not be on the exact path that you wanted to be on. And it's because you think you should be doing something else than what you actually want to do. So it's easy to say now in retrospect, but I feel really blessed because I love my path that I've taken and I love that I've gone inside of a studio and back to producing. And I love that I worked at a big studio like Paramount, you know, had the privilege of working with Sherry for a little over a year before she retired and then worked with everyone else. And, you know, over the years there. And I love that I then left again and went and partnered with Scott Stuber. And we had a blast for 5 years together making movies. And now he runs Netflix.
Yeah.
And now he runs the biggest company. He runs Netflix. And that was fun too. And I made, you know, I went back to Universal making movies there, which was awesome. And I did that for 5 years. And then, you know, my long collaborator, Brad Weston, who I'd worked with at Paramount, was running New Regency, and he offered me the position to go be president of production there. And, you know, at the time I was like, huh, I love producing, but wait, they're really doing interesting things. And I haven't been president of a financing studio yet. And maybe this can be interesting. And I went and I loved it. And it was a run that of movies that, you know, when I got there, 12 Years a Slave was just released and went on to win the Best Picture. And then we had Birdman was in post, and I got to be back with Alejandro. I had worked with him on Babel at Paramount, and during Birdman, we talked about going to make Revenant, and then we made Revenant, and we made The Big Short and Noah and Gone Girl and Assassin's Creed and Alvin and the Chipmunks. And it just was a blast. You know, we had a blast for 3 years. And it was an amazing run of movies and, you know, winning back to back Best Pictures, the company did. And then almost, really close on a third with The Revenant, but Alejandro winning Best Director back to back. I mean, it was an extraordinary moment. Again, all driven by filmmaker driven movies, right? All of those movies, what they had in common were directors and authorship. And, you know, once we were there and that was happening, Brad and I decided, you know, like, let's go try and do this for ourselves, you know? So we did. And we left, he left before me. And then we started our company, Make Ready, which again was amazing and an awesome experience and, you know, forced me to learn new things that I hadn't done before, because when you're a startup company, you don't have a big infrastructure like you do at a big studio. But we were financing films and, you know, it was, and we were doing television and it was great. And, you know, one of the great joys of my career was meeting Melina Matsoukas and Lena Waithe and working on Queen and Slim. I love that film. I love the both of them. I think Melina is, you know, a superstar director, and I feel privileged to be part of that film. And we had a great time, all of us together making it. And
it was amazing.
Thank you. And I think it's a really important movie. And I think it speaks to the times. And I think it is 100% Lena Melina's movie. It was their authorship. It was their collaboration, which was beautiful to watch and inspiring. And they inspire me all the time, every day. And you know, and I was not expecting this job to come along, which leads me to now, to MGM. You know, like I said, Mike and I have been friends for a really long time, and we've collaborated together. When he was running New Line, you know, he ran New Line back in the 90s when I was starting out at Jersey, and our companies were really close friends. And we worked on a Richard LeGravenais film called Living Out Loud that we made at New Line. And that's when I got to know Mike. And we just have stayed friends and collaborators over the years. And when I was an executive, he was a producer. When I was an executive at Paramount, he was a producer, and we worked together on some films. And then, you know, we've just been like friends and family friends and just all of it. And, you know, when he took the job, I was so excited for him. And I remember, you know, just congratulating him when it got announced, because he's the best. Like, he was, you know, him running New Line back in the day was the greatest. And he loves cinema. He loves directors. He loves movies. He is a student of film. And we're very like-minded in that way. And we both sort of went on to separate careers and overlapped, you know, every once in a while. But the chance to be able to run the studio with him and build a slate of films that we in our hearts believe in, which are filmmaker driven movies, we feel there is a massive lane for that. And, you know, eventually theaters will come back, and we still believe that there are amazing films that can be made that deserve to be seen, you know, theatrically. And, you know, a lot of what we've been chasing after and buying are director driven material. So, you know, I just started 4 weeks ago.
So
I haven't been in the office.
No, I know. So let's just pause for 1 second.
Yeah.
So by the way, you and Mike have very similar career paths of producing, mm-hmm. being executive, being a producer, back to executive, being a producer, back to executive. So what do you think are the similarities between producing and being a studio executive? Because you said you always act like a producer when you're a studio executive. And what do you think the different skill sets are?
Well, I think the similarities are you still have to have good taste. You still have to know how to develop a script. You still have to know how to recognize good filmmakers. You still have to understand how to get from A to B to C, from inception of an idea to developing a script, to releasing the movie, to marketing the film. That's all the same, right? I think the difference is you have to slate build in a studio when you're a studio executive versus when you're a producer. You still have to build out your slate as a producer because you have to keep a lot of things bouncing in the air because you just never know when something's going to go. And that's your livelihood. Like you get, you know, producers make money when their movies get made or their TV shows get made. They don't just make money when nothing's getting made. So that's challenging. As an executive, you know, you have to have an eclectic, diversified slate. And now with streaming, deserves to be seen theatrically if that's what your avenue of releasing your films are. So there's other things you have to think about, like, what am I building out for 21, 22, 23? You have to think in terms of growth and build on a 3-year basis, I think, more than when you're a producer, you're like, I'm going to make this movie in the spring and maybe this one in the fall. You don't think in terms of slate building. So I think that's a big difference. I also find that there are, you know, you have to think about the business side of it and more of the economic side of it, of how, what is the return going to be? You know, you have to look at it in a more, I'm not saying you don't have to be passionate as a studio executive, because you absolutely do. You can't not be passionate doing stuff and picking movies, but you have to look at the overview of your slate and like, what do you think, where do you think the, you know, do you have a big movie star driven, you know, movie anchoring it? Do you have, you know, when you don't have a lot of built in franchises, when you're not a Marvel or a Pixar or Disney, you know, where they have so many different avenues of franchises, you need to make movies that you feel are going to have a return and they're not relying on IP. And I strongly believe that filmmakers are IP. That is the IP. And I believe with strong voices, you will be able to tell bold, entertaining stories that either feel, you know, that are super obviously commercial, or stories that are bold and reflect the times we're living in. And that makes it bold and theater worthy. And I think that singular voice and commitment from a director is what drives great content.
Yeah, I mean, and you guys are taking over a studio that is very dependent on theatrical releasing. And yes. So rather than you going to work for Netflix or Apple or even HBO Max, you and Mike have chosen to take on a task of, we are making movies for the theatrical experience because that's what MGM does. We don't have a streaming service. We don't have a subscription service. We're in this for the theatrical experience. And so right now, we're at a very interesting time in the business because we have been all on lockdown for months and months and months, and we have been consuming streaming content pretty much exclusively because our theaters haven't been open. And, you know, a network is still, you know, putting on their programming, but really streaming has really probably occupied more people's time than anything. And therefore, a lot of that streaming library is being eaten up. MGM can't put out any movies because there's no theaters open. So when you guys talk about this time right now, and then we'll get to how the hell do you open a movie studio during a pandemic. But when you guys are just talking about the business of, and specifically MGM's business right now, and given that streaming is, you know,
obviously never going to go away. And a lot of that content has been eaten up. And clearly there is going to be some big bidding for some big high profile projects. For instance, like the latest Scorsese movie that Apple got a hold of. And I know you guys bid hard on, mm-hmm. which is the latest one with Leo. Mm-hmm. So what kind of high level discussions are you guys having about the business in general and specifically the theatrical business, since that's your livelihood?
I think we think that the theatrical, you know, we're having lots of discussions like everyone is, and we believe that theaters will come back when people feel it's safe and comfortable to go to the theater. And I think those conversations are happening every day. And I think there's, you know, people are starting to, there's data that's showing that, and we're going to have to see what happens over the next few weeks. I think that the thing about MGM right now, which was very interesting, is we had two films in post and one finished, which was James Bond, which is comes out in the fall. And, you know, the two films in post are finishing up and we had one film shooting. So we don't have a lot of content that was stored up right now that is waiting to be released, like some of the other bigger, you know, some of the other studios. What's been interesting for us now is because we're starting fresh, because Mike and I are coming in and designing MGM the way we want it to feel and what the community we want it to be and sure. the home for filmmakers, this is the time that we've had to do that because we are on a pandemic and we've been very opportunistic about buying material that doesn't need to start shooting until next year. And that's where our focus is right now. So, you know, weirdly, by the time our slate of films catches up, I feel for now, and, you know, we can have this conversation again in a week, you know, there's no way for me to predict anything in the future, right? None of us can. If we could, we'd be brilliant, but
we'd be stuck at home and
home. If I could predict the future, I would have found the solution for this problem. But you know, I strongly believe that by the time we are ready with our content to be released, that the world will hopefully have found some solutions to coronavirus and to making the public feel comfortable going back to the theater.
Okay, so now you guys have decided we're going to start this movie studio. It's going to be filmmaker friendly. We're going to put our, you know, our love of filmmaking, and we're going to put our money where our mouth is. Mm-hmm. How the hell do you start a movie studio during a pandemic? So you guys are coming in. You have a robust library that you can, you know, mm-hmm. look at and draw IP from, and I'm sure it's throwing off some cash to keep the lights on, but you guys now, you know, a month ago decide to let's do this together and let's figure this out. How does that look now? What what is your day look like and what is happening that all of a sudden every 3 days on deadline I'm reading you guys have some fabulous movie you guys are making? How is this working?
Well, it's actually been working really well for us because we are hungry. We are kind of the new kids on the block, really. And we are very specific in what we're looking for. And I think there are filmmakers that believe like we do in theatrical and that the theatrical experience is necessary for cinema and that we will be, you know, it will right itself at some point. Right. So our company is, it's really exciting. And what we're trying to do for me is really exciting. And, you know, my day looks like reading and waking up at 5 o'clock and reading scripts. And then my daughter wakes up and she just finished school last Friday, but I have a 7.5-year-old daughter, Mackenzie. And, you know, we have Zoom school and which was not what I was expecting this year. And I have multiple Zoom meetings every day. She pops into each of those every once in a while to say hello. I have met our entire team and everyone who works at MGM through Zoom. So I have not met anybody in person yet. And I have to say, it's a great company and there's wonderful people there. And we're all really productive and energized and activated. And we're finding movies that we want to make and stories we want to tell. And we're kind of storing up the scripts for when we can be unleashed to go back and work. And like I said earlier, it's about slate building. So this is exactly what we need to be doing in this moment, is building our slate to have, you know, a diverse group of storytellers and stories that we want to tell. You know, we're also, you know, we're able to make we greenlit an animated movie 2 weeks ago, Addams Family 2, and, you know, animated able to still function and get made. And, you don't realize, I mean, what I've noticed the most is you can be really efficient by working on Zoom. And All this time that we like drive around the city and get stressed out of trying to get from one side of the city to the other, or being late for a meeting, or being, you know, back to back to back. I mean, I had a pitch last week that was awesome. Like, an actor got on, they sent me a video ahead of time. Like, an actor got on, he said why he liked the pitch. The director gave his director statement. The writer pitched out the story. It was 25 minutes. And if you wanted to pursue it, you got to get on the phone with them and ask questions. I was like, it's the most genius thing I've ever seen in my life. Right. I mean, how many times do people, you don't have to pour, you know, the writers don't have to feel nervous going into a room and pitching. Like, it's all, it's very efficient, you know? So I find all that really fascinating. And I have to say, I wonder how, when we do go back to work, which we're all going to go back to an office at some point, what that looks like. And, you know, you can get a lot done by not being in an office, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been fascinating to see. I also sold a pitch like that. They did a musical and they actually just wrote all the songs and performed them, you know, kind of like if you were to hear like a Diane Warren demo. They just demoed this whole thing and sold the pitch, and we're off to the races. It's been very
cool
to watch how different people are putting Zoom packages together for people to, you know, and sizzles and things to watch. I will say
it's
this.
Great.
My two cents on why I think you guys have a tremendous advantage right now, and then I'll tell you my two cents on where I think the challenges are. Because let's start with the challenges, because everybody is competing with Stuber, right? So everybody is like, you know, Netflix is competing with Netflix because, you know, they have had two advantages to the big studios. The first advantage is, you know, Stuber has an incredible, incredible guy. He's got he knows everybody.
Yeah, he's the best.
And he, like DeLuca and you, have been open to filmmakers and saying to them, hey, do your thing. We're going to give you guys a tremendous amount of freedom. And that's been very appealing to filmmakers. So that's one challenge right there, because they've been very open about that. And the second big challenge that you guys have and all the studios have versus Netflix is just that big marketing spend, because Netflix doesn't have that problem. They don't have that giant spend at the end of a picture, because they're not trying to put it up in, you know, multiple cities, multiple countries around the world, where they're having to do specific language spends, you know, different 15-second spots, et cetera, et cetera. So that's going to be a challenge. But where I think you and anybody who wants to be in business, you know, as you said, not in that IP, you know, Marvel, Disney universe, where everybody I think is going to have kind of a great heyday, is I think everybody's home right now doing the thing you saw in the 70s, which is what story do I want to tell from my perspective? What is the movie I've been dying to write? What is the television show I've been wanting to see? Well, what can I do? I interviewed Tony McNamara on this podcast a couple of days ago. You know, he created The Great.
Yep.
He just took Catherine the Great and made a fantastic TV show about it. You know, Lin-Manuel just goes to gets a book on Hamilton and creates this incredible $1 billion, piece of IP. And so I think that you guys are going to come out of this pandemic with just a gold rush of, especially with Mike being such a, an incredible filmmaker friendly.
Yeah.
I say this with the most admiration, Gunslinger, where he's like, okay, I'll take it. You know, he was on my podcast. We were talking about Paul Thomas Anderson and talking about Boogie Nights and how he just said, it. I'm going to the mat for this show.
Yeah.
He's my generation. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I think that'll give you guys a big advantage because if you guys are willing to do that and put these big bets down on filmmakers, you guys are going to have a lot of material that's going to be interesting and exciting in the same way that it was in the 70s, those same kind of movies you loved as you were growing up, because those are the kind of movies that those people were writing as the big studios weren't paying attention to them.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Hold on, my daughter just came in.
Hi.
You can say hi, Mac.
Hi.
This is Mackenzie.
Mackenzie.
Hello.
Well, can't. Here, I'll let you see her.
Okay. Hold on.
You can see her. Sorry.
It's okay. Hey, hi, Mackenzie. Hey, Mackenzie. Mackenzie, what has been your favorite movie that you have seen or television show that you have seen lately?
Descendants?
Yeah. Descendants 1 or 2?
3 is my favorite.
Ooh, 3. That is good. That is really good. I've only seen 1 because my daughter kind of is a little bit too old now for that. But I know the franchise very well.
Yes, that's a big deal in our house.
Awesome. I love Descendants.
Yeah, but you also love Mrs. Doubtfire. We watched that like 3 times.
Ooh, very cool. Yes. Yes.
Now she's gone.
She's like... Yeah. Now you're trying to make me more sophisticated. I like the Descendants.
I love the Descendants. We listen to the music all the time. It's really darling.
It's so good. My daughter is 12, and so she's aged out of Descendants and is firmly in Mean Girls and Hamilton. So that is,
Mean
yeah.
Mean Girls. Oh. I worked. That was the first movie I was got assigned when I went to Paramount was Mean Girls.
And that musical is on full repeat.
I know. It's great.
So let me ask you, so you're getting these great Zoom pitches and you're getting these, you're waking up at 5 and you're homeschooling your daughter. What are you doing to keep yourself creatively inspired right now?
Well, I feel really creatively inspired because I have to say, because there's no other distractions besides family and work, like my husband and I actually at the end of the day, like we talk and then we've been watching we watched the Michael Jordan documentary, which was amazing. We just watched the Michelle Obama documentary, which on Becoming on her tour, which was amazing. We feel like we try to like take space for us and take walks together and we walk our dog and, as a family. And every weekend, the three of us have been, we go on bike rides in our neighborhood. And that's really fun because there's not that many cars around. So we're able to like ride on the street. And our daughter has loved us. My husband, Mitch, travels a lot for his business and he travels a lot to Chicago. So this is the first time in the 10 years that we've been together that he's home a lot too. So it's been really interesting. And I have to be mindful because I just started this really intense, amazing big job and I'm working a lot from morning until night. I have to take the time to unplug and check back in with my daughter and my husband so that I stay inspired, and they inspire me. My family inspires me. I love my daughter's creativity inspires me. My husband inspires me. And, that's been the best part of this is because I also have been spending so much more time with them than I normally have. We eat dinner together every night. Like I haven't done that before because, you're out, you're on a set, you're shooting, traveling everywhere. Last year I traveled a ton. For the prep and the shoot of Queen and Slim, and I would come home on the weekends, and we you're hustling all the time, and then you're forgetting that you have dinner scheduled, and you go out, and you're seeing your friends, and you're over scheduling everything, and you don't have time to you don't have time to just be creative, right? So I feel like what's been a blessing is because I have no other distractions besides family and work, you can read a script and digest it and be thoughtful about it and watch movies and, you know, chase after the directors and the voices that you want to support and tell and get them to come and introduce them to, you know, a simple introduction to a director or to a writer or to an actor of here's what Mike and my intention is. Here's what the intention is of the studio. And you can be really deliberate, I think, in a way when you have so many other distractions when you're going to work every day that sort of stop you sometimes from being your best creative self and being open to an idea that you might have, you know, because of the hustle and the busyness of being in an office and driving back and forth and all the craziness, you know, getting our kids to activities and the whole thing, you might dismiss something that doesn't deserve to be a story that didn't deserve to be dismissed because you weren't focused or paying attention enough. I feel way more focused now than I have in a long time.
Yeah. And it's so interesting just in terms of the time and the pandemic and then the Black Lives Matter.
But it's amazing what's happening. It's so tragic, but
just to
it's
take
amazing.
The time. Just to take the time now to connect with your family and connect with human beings and to be thoughtful about how we treat people and how we are and who we are has been really amazing and uncomfortable and beautiful and scary and
it
all
is,
everything.
But it's necessary. I think it's necessary. I think it's everything that's happening right now is necessary. I am inspired by, I am inspired to do better. I am inspired to listen. I am inspired to learn. I am inspired to really support and lift diverse voices and new voices. And, you know, and I feel really actually energized and activated on a personal level, a political level, and a career level. I think it has been a scary time for lots of people, and I feel very lucky and blessed to be doing what I'm doing, and I feel very lucky and blessed that my family's safe and healthy, and I love movies. I think movies heal. I think movies can unite. I think movies can bring joy and laughter, and I think... You know, the 70s is a good time to reference because it was like, you know, after all, it came out of the 60s and the musicals and, you know, all the different kinds of different films that were made in the 60s, but led a movement into bold, audacious, amazing director driven movies. And I think we're definitely in that time now.
Absolutely. So since we were talking about diverse and interesting voices, I always ask this at the end of every podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Best day on set of Queen and Slim.
Oh, my God. Best day. I mean, there are so many days. the best day was there was a lot of challenging days. I'll tell you that was that sure. much on a production level. I mean, the best day for me was probably really the first day and watching from a side, but watching Melina and Lena collaborate. Like their collaboration and friendship is so beautiful. And honestly, it's super inspiring. And I don't know, they both inspired me to be better and do better and work hard and love art. You know, they love art. They are great artists. And that was probably the best day, seeing it all come together, like after the prep had been had and all the casting had been chosen and all the wonderful costumes that Shiona Torini designed happened, like just seeing it all there together was pretty extraordinary. And, you know, Jody and Daniel were magical together. So
yeah, it was a great, great, great movie. Congratulations on that. And congratulations on this new job. And I'm really excited to see everything that you guys are going to do. You just signed a first look deal with one of my dear friends, Jennifer Todd. So shout out to Jennifer. Congratulations to her. That's another great fit of old friends coming together.
It's old school.
She worked with me for many years at Revolution, and we did a lot of great stuff together. So congratulations on that. And thank you for doing this, and good luck.
Thank you and for having me.
It's great to have another filmmaker in that job. So congrats.
Thank you so much.